fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there.
G.I. Joe, American hero. G.I. Joe is there.
It's G.I. Joe against Cobra the enemy, fighting to save the day. He never can stop, he's always there, fighting for freedom over land and air.
G.I. Joe.
Joe is the code name for America's daring, highly trained special mission force. Its purpose? To defend human freedom against Cobra, a ruthless terrorist organization determined to rule the world.
He never gives up. He'll stay till the fight's won. G.I. Joe will dare.
G.I. Joe.
And welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I'm your host, Walter DeRaglia, joined by your host, Chris Owen, professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College. Christopher.
Walter, how are you after these many, many weeks off?
Yeah, we had 2 weeks off, Chris. This is the first show in the year 2011, so yeah. Happy New Year to all our listenership.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we've been doing this show for over 2 years now. Can you believe that? And now we're now in our third year and going strong, and hopefully, with any luck, we'll do it for another three or four, or who knows how many more years.
Onwards and upwards. Chris, you
absolutely.
Know what? I had something to say, though. That was a great intro. But the thing I like about that G.I. Joe track, the narrator... Yeah. And the singer, it's like neither of them had a clue what G.I. Joe was. Right? It's like they walked in, here's the script, boys. And it's like they're singing it, but Chris, there's no passion.
Oh, well, you know, you can't always get James Brown in a G.I. Joe intro, right?
Yeah, I guess so you're right.
That's the problem here. All right, so it is, of course, the new year, and we got lots to talk about. We had lots of stuff going on over the past two or three weeks, and lots of industry news we're going to touch on. I know there's a couple things that I'm excited to talk about later on, why don't we just get started with new this week? And of course, new this week is brought to you by Marvel Comics. Marvel Comics is probably trying to put people out of business and little small comic book stores out of business for many years now. And with any luck with online comics, they're going to continue to do so. Brought to you by Marvel Comics.
Download a Marvel comic today. Thanks, Chris. Chris, new this week, I want to start with Anita Blake, Circus of the Damned, the Ingenue.
Ingenue?
Yeah, that too. Number one.
Bless you.
Yeah. Anita Blake. Now, Anita Blake is written by Laurel K. Hamilton.
Right.
And I think it's about vampires.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those vampire hunter kind of things. Like, I'm sure there are a lot of people that know way more about it than I do. I'm not really into my vampire lore, to be honest with you. So.
Well, it sells great at the shop. And, you know, vampires, zombies, you know, that's a winning formula. But this thing has a really good, cult following.
Well, it does, because I think they started out as novels.
Yes.
And then it became a comic book after that. And
yeah, adopted into comics, yes.
Adapted. they're finally bringing home the little Marvel comic home to roost, and hopefully they're going to raise that little Marvel comic and sort of grow up to be big comic when it's older.
Got the message, Chris. I screwed up. Yeah, they adapted it into comic format, and it's working really well. And the whole Anita Blake thing, with the way Marvel's doing it, is they're tackling, you know, a miniseries here and a miniseries there, and then they're going to the graphic novels. And the graphic novels are doing very well with the Anita Blake franchise, and it's good to see more original material coming out of things that, you know, like something like this, it's non-superhero that
right,
is working, that's
right,
that's adapted from another medium.
Well, yeah, and I mean, we've seen the same sort of thing happen with Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which of course has become incredibly popular, and also not unlike Stephen King's Dark Tower series.
Yep.
So this is, although this is nothing new, there are certainly lots of great forums for other media.
Well, yeah, it's a continuation of a success story, which is the part I like.
And you know, even Orson Scott Card, who wrote Ender's Game,
yes.
he did. Not only did he do Ender's Game, Ender's sort of comic books, but he also helped to. He did one of the Iron Man series as well. So here's you know, what I would call pop culture literary figures who are writing their own creations for comics, as well as writing other people's creations for comics, which I think is really cool.
Excellent, excellent. All right, on DC. DC's coming out with Weird Worlds number one.
Weird Worlds.
Yeah, it's part one, number one of a 6-part miniseries. And the premise here is that DC will be filling 6 issues with, each issue will have a 10-page story of a different... it's like an anthology where they're introducing new characters.
Right, okay, yeah.
So in this first one, Aaron Lopresti, yeah, you're
yeah,
right.
Okay, yeah. He's been around for a while, yeah.
He's introducing his newest creation called The Garbage Man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Kevin Maguire.
Oh, Kevin, yeah, okay. Yeah. You do know that name, right?
Yes,
okay.
And he's introducing a new outer space kind of storyline and hero called Tenga.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds like DC is excellent at doing these kind of introductions of various characters through sort of like introductory kind of comics. I don't really know how to word that.
Yeah.
But I mean, they did it back in the 80s, and they did DC Comics Presents.
Yeah.
DC Showcase.
Right.
And they've done other kind of books like that where they kind of have first issue specials where they have new characters brought in into a particular comic, and they kind of, it's kind of like a, you know, let's see how this thing sells, and then if it sells well, they usually
let's see what sticks.
Yeah.
Let's throw everything. Right. Well, like the third story is a Lobo story by Kevin Van Hook.
Okay.
And so you get Lobo. So you get a character that you kind of know.
Well, yeah. I mean, Lobo's a character that's been around for a long time, but it hasn't had its own series for quite some time now. So maybe they're trying to see, okay, is this a character that we can revive and give its own series again?
Yep.
Or is it still dead in the water?
Right. Right. And you're getting these two new things. So, and over a 6-issue miniseries, you're obviously going to get a lot of creativity here.
Yeah.
And like you said before, DC can kind of wade through the response.
Yeah, for sure.
And develop, hopefully, a few of these new characters that they're introducing into something
and
else.
And it's interesting, too, because these creators are certainly, they're not new creators into the industry. Kevin Maguire has been around for decades, and Aaron Lopresti has been around for at least a decade or so as well. I mean, Aaron Lopresti worked on X-Men. Kevin Maguire has worked on Avengers and Justice League of America and Justice League Europe and all that kind of stuff way back in the day. So these guys have been around for a long, long time. So this is nothing new, and I hope they do really well, because those two characters two creators are guys that I really like.
Excellent. All right. Over at Image, Chris, first of all, Walking Dead number 80, it hits the stands today at your local comic book store. And that's the beginning of the new No Way Out story arc. So Walking Dead fans obviously will be picking that up. But also Walking Dead is starting with their weekly number one.
Right.
So I think, from what I read, to tie, there's been a lot of new Walking Dead fans created by the...
from the TV series.
TV series.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're doing, over the next, I guess, 52 weeks, they're doing weekly Walking Dead reissues of the original comics.
Right. Well, which is actually a brilliant move, because this way they're going to try to get people up to speed on the newest issues coming out, right? So they're going to have one issue a week for the next 52 weeks, actually maybe even beyond that. But they're going to try to get everybody up to speed as much as they can, so that they can obviously start to buy the ongoing series,
right? And prep everybody, of course, for the show that will come back next October.
Then, right?
It's not a concern, obviously, but the thing I'll voice is, you know, the graphic novels are doing a great job doing that already, though.
True, but I guess, you know, maybe it may be daunting for some people to spend that kind of money on a graphic novel, whereas I'm sure the individual issues may be a little less money, and you know, they can just go out and buy each one as an individual kind of book and not have to worry about shelling out that, you know, $15 to $20 per the graphic novel.
Right, right. Okay. Well, anyway, Walking Dead weekly number one and Walking Dead number 80 also hitting your local comic book stores today. All right. And Chris, you know what? We're going to end New This Week right there.
All righty. And, well, you know, of course, when you have the end of New this week, that does, of course, mean we have another musical interlude. And, of course, you know, I figured we might as well just start something a little bit new with this whole new year with a little Josie and the Pussycats.
That was beautiful.
All right. That was, of course, Josie and the Pussycats for all you fans out there.
All right. Which brings us, Chris, to industry news.
Industry news, Walt. Yes, industry news.
This week is brought to you by DC Comics.
Oh.
DC Comics doing their best to put the local comic shop out of business. Oh. Download a DC comic today.
Kind of like what Marvel was doing.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's what I tried to say earlier, but it didn't quite come out the same way. Yeah.
Right. It would help if I gave you the actual ad. Good ad. Good attempt, though.
Our listening audience isn't supposed to know that.
All right, Chris. I'm going to start industry news off with big news early this week that came out. Marvel getting the new editor-in-chief, Alex Alonso.
Right. Alex Alonso. Are you saying that correct? Is that right?
No, hold on. Axel Alonso.
Axel?
Sorry. Axel Alonso,
right,
is the new editor-in-chief of Marvel Entertainment.
I know. You probably got him confused with like Axel Foley or something like
Axel
that.
Axel Rose.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And Joe Quesada, who was, I believe, acting as editor-in-chief.
Acting as Axel Alonso.
Yes. Who knows? What they do in their spare time is not my concern. He will be going to become what the heck does it say here? He's like the creative director. Chief creative officer.
Right, yeah.
And he's there to ensure that all the Marvel characters remain true to the essence of the rich Marvel history.
Right. Well, which I think isn't a bad title. I think this is probably something that should be done anyways, because I'm sure there's lots of creators out there that want to put their own spin on certain characters. And then this is just a way of making sure that Marvel stays true to itself and it's going to run its course. Now,
hold, I'm going to cut you off there.
Okay.
So what happens is Quesada's sitting there. The guardian
of comics.
Of Marvel.
That's right.
And then you got Axel.
He's like Uatu the Watcher.
Right.
Yeah.
So you got young Axel here, and he's like the editor-in-chief.
Right.
Who's like going to say, hey, artist guy or writer guy, you can't do that, or you can do that.
Right.
But then it has to pass through Quesada's things to say, hey, let's see if it's tampering with the Marvel tradition. It's the same thing twice.
Well, okay, but hold on a second here. Joe Quesada did fantastic things for Marvel, right? Like, he really brought them back from the depths of bankruptcy, right? So I think what they're trying to do here is they're saying, hey, you know what? Let somebody else have the reins of editor-in-chief, but we're not going to let anybody just tamper with what we've done so far. So let's have Joe Quesada, who has built this sort of industry again for us, let's have him be the all-powerful, overseeing editor-in-chief type guy. And we're going to let the other guy kind of cut his chops doing the editor-in-chief stuff. But you know what? Just to make sure he doesn't get out of line, we're going to have Joe Quesada standing over him saying, okay, you know what? You can't have Spider-Man wearing a bright yellow costume and frilly tights.
Right, right. So Axel Alonso is like the pretend editor-in-chief.
Well, not really, because he's probably going to... He'll be the one...
He's an editor-in-chief on a very short leash.
Yes. You know, he's... You know, I think Marvel... I think Joe Quesada is like the Comics Code authority for Marvel, right? So it's like there's this sort of overseeing watchdog that's going to make sure that things are still going to be run the proper way according to Marvel.
Now, is Joe Quesada that because Joe Quesada did a few things that screwed up continuity while he was editor-in-chief and there was nobody to rein him in?
That's a good point. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Or maybe he's learned from his mistakes and he wants to make sure that nobody does it again.
Right. Yeah.
And as far as continuity goes, there's a lot of really bad continuity before him, too. Let's not forget. I mean, for those of you that remember the whole Spider-Man clone saga, which was just a travesty, really. Although there are some people here that like it. I do believe there's somebody in this room, not mentioning any names there, James.
Our engineer James is about to hit Chris.
Yeah, because there's some people that, you know, really like that stuff. But
he is wearing his Clone Wars t-shirt.
It's Ben Reilly shirt.
Yeah, that's nice. It's a good look. Looks good on you, Jay.
But, having said that, there are some people that really don't like it either. So, I think this is a good thing.
So what Marvel is doing, what Disney is doing, what whoever the heck is doing, is it's protecting what Marvel has done so far and making sure that it doesn't get out of hand.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because I actually forgot temporarily that Disney was the owner of Marvel. And while we were talking about this, I started thinking about how Disney does the same sort of thing. Like, I'm sure they have pretty tight rein over the way their characters are used, right? And I mean, not only do they have tight rein over their characters, they have tight rein over their employees. I mean, there was a rumor going around that for a while that if you wanted to grow a beard and you worked for Disney, you had to take 2 weeks off in order to grow that beard because you didn't want to have people scruffy looking while they were trying to grow that beard. I mean,
that is so cool.
That's like a tight run ship, man.
That is a tight run ship.
So, I mean, I think maybe not to that extent. Maybe Marvel's trying to say, hey, you know what? We want to make sure that none of our characters have beards. I mean,
right.
You know, to that, yeah. Something like that. Anyways.
Sure. But the cool thing about comics is they can grow a beard in a panel.
They really can, yeah. You know,
so.
Yeah, they really can.
All right.
Do you remember when Thor had a beard for a while?
Thor did have a beard. Yeah. Remember when Thor was a frog?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Walt Simonson.
Well, he kind of wasn't a frog, but...
Well, kind of was,
yeah.
But, you know.
That was cool. All right, Chris. Speaking of Marvel, let's stay with Marvel.
All right.
And let's talk about their big, big summer crossover event called Fear Itself.
Fear Itself, yes. And, of course, this is... There's talk of all different types of fear characters and actually our engineer James was telling us a little bit about it earlier. He was quite excited about it.
Yes.
I don't want to go on too much. What do you have written there?
Well, listen, the prologue is going to be, it's a nice big thick 45 pager going to be written by Ed Brubaker. Now, there's not a lot of details on the web right now about the whole event, but there's a lot of excitement about the event.
Right.
Okay. So you get Ed Brubaker, powerful player in the Marvel writing scene, writing the prologue. You get Matt Fraction writing the 7-part miniseries.
Right.
You get Stuart Immonen, local boy that's drawing it.
Yep.
Right. And the crossovers, they say, will be on a scale of like the Secret Invasion level of crossovers,
right?
Which was pretty extensive,
right?
Right. Back the year that just passed, 2010, Marvel really kind of laid off the big, huge, publicized crossover
thing.
But you know what? A lot of retailers complained about the lack of a big event because big events drive sales.
Sure.
And retailers like sales.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah.
So retailers, I'm reading a little bit on the forums, retailers are excited about this. They're behind Marvel on this.
Well, of course they are, for
sure. And the thing, though, is the little snippets that they're given about, the whole thing involving like real world stuff, like day to day actual life stuff, like you know the issues that Spider-Man is fighting is stuff like unemployment things like that are like the potential is endless, and then you're going to match characters in the Marvel universe to real world situations
and real fears that they may have,
right? And so they're thinking that the God of Fear, as James mentioned earlier, that Phobos.
Phobos was the son of Ares, if I'm correct,
right?
And so they're saying that he might be behind the whole thing,
but there's also talk that Nightmare
might be coming back as a character.
Nightmare, wasn't he like Casper's horse?
Well, yes, Casper's horse was Nightmare.
My God, Casper's horse is coming back.
I can't believe Casper's horse is coming back to haunt us. Oh, the travesty.
Oh, the Marvel Universe.
Oh, the humanity, everyone.
Is in trouble.
Yes, Nightmare might be coming back. At least that's the speculation anyways.
Yeah, so I think the event's going to work because I think there's pent-up demand for a big Marvel event.
Yeah, I think it's good to have some time off from a big event like that where you're not forced to buy 85,000 issues in order to try to figure out what the story is.
So what you're saying is the big events should be like the Olympics.
Well, I don't know
every fourth year.
I don't know about every 4 years, but it's good to have a year off. Maybe maybe it's like the opposite Olympics. We can have a year off every 4 years.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Well, Marvel's, what is it called again? Fear Itself, coming out this summer. Just jump online, you know, go on to Marvel Fear Itself, and you're going to have tons and tons to read about the whole event. But we're all excited about it. All right, Chris, remember back in the 50s?
Not really.
Chris, do you remember back in the 50s?
I don't recall being that old, but sure.
You know, the 3D movies were all
the rage. For sure. Like Creature from the Black Lagoon, one of my favorite
stuff,
Yeah.
And 3D comics were all the rage.
Not in the 50s.
Yes.
Really?
3D comics were all the rage. There was a 3D Three Stooges comic.
In the 50s?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
as a historian, you'd think I'd know that.
Well, that's okay. I mean, the 3D stuff slipped by.
Yeah, it must have.
But the thing is Image is, well, as you know, 3D is a big thing in movies again.
Oh, it's huge. It's massive. And they're saying that that's one of the things that's driving sales in the movie theaters, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so comics, again, are latching on to the 3D craze of the movies. And Image is doing Captain Wonder 3D. It's coming out next month in February, and it's basically an all-ages thing where, you know, Captain Wonder is the world's greatest superhero.
Right.
And the thing is, what they're saying is that this is going to be like, you know, new technology. So you're not going to get a flipping headache. You need to take four Tylenols when you read a comic.
But hold on. But as you said, 3D comics are nothing new. I mean, even in my lifetime, I remember years ago, like back in the 80s, they tried to come up with all kinds of 3D comics. And you'd have the red and blue lens, and you'd try to read it without the glasses, and you couldn't read it because it was kind of hard to read. And then you'd put the glasses on, it would give you a headache. And it was sort of 3D-ish, but not really, and it was just sort of a gimmick. And then you'd lose the paper 3D glasses that it came with, and then your comic was sucked because you couldn't read it anymore.
Yeah, you know what? It was all that blurriness.
Yeah. So this is nothing new. So I don't know if this is going to work this time.
Well, this one also has the 3D glasses.
Okay.
Right? But apparently the technology has improved.
Oh.
So you're going to see some really good 3D. They say it's worth the money.
But you know what's funny is that okay, I'm gonna question this. I'm gonna question whether or not 3D is actually gonna stick around, because they looked at the number of movies that had 3D in them and the ones that did not. And although the movies that had 3D in them did do better, out of the top 10, not all the top 10 3D movies. Not all the top 10 movies were in 3D.
Didn't understand a word.
Okay, for example, the Iron Man movie that came out last year,
right,
in the top 10, not a 3D movie.
Right.
However, Toy Story, which came out, was the number one movie of last year, and it was in 3D.
Right.
So all I'm saying is that the 3D aspect doesn't necessarily drive sales.
Right, okay. Fair enough. But, you know, listen, Image needs a gimmick.
Right.
And Image was the king of gimmicks, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And it's almost fitting that Image...
For sure. Let's not forget the the scratch and sniff covers and the die cut.
Do you remember those, Chris?
Oh, they're terrible. Terrible, yeah. And, you know, see-through.
Do they still smell, Chris? Do you have those at home?
I'll let you know.
Hey, all right. We're going to move on. Chris, now, you mentioned to me earlier that Christina Hendricks...
Yes. Yes.
She wants to play the Wonder Woman on TV.
Okay, so for those of you that aren't familiar with Christina Hendricks, first of all, shame on you. For those of you that are familiar with Christina Hendricks, she, as you know, she is the one of the leading actresses in the TV series Mad Men. And she's been around for a little while, and she's getting lots of publicity. She is a stunning, stunning woman. And according to a couple of different websites, she has said that she wants to play Wonder Woman. Now, For those of you that are fans of Wonder Woman, this is a good thing. She's a beautiful woman, and she's a great actress, and I think she would really fit the part.
Is she? Will she be a good Wonder Woman?
I think she would be.
She a brunette?
No, she's a redhead.
How does a redhead play Wonder
Woman? Okay, well, you can dye people's hair.
Oh.
Like, I mean, like, that's...
You
like,
can?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe that. Right. I know. But she's got lots of energy to her that I think the fans will really enjoy.
Right.
And okay. And for those of the male persuasion, I think they'll also really enjoy seeing her in the Wonder Woman bustier.
Right. Now, remember the old Linda Carter Wonder Woman? I think the 90% of the viewership was based on her looks.
Absolutely.
I won't say 90%. Obviously, there was kids watching it, but there was a lot of, adult males watching it for that. So you think the TV guys are going for the same thing here, just trying to get a buxom lady up there?
She certainly is buxom, that's for sure.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of people out there that would enjoy watching her run and tie people up.
Right. Wow. All right. Get me my ticket. Chris, the San Diego Comic-Con is always sold out.
Yes.
And last year was no exception. And there was a couple of guys, young, budding entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah?
Who basically went out and got a photocopier and ran a whole bunch of photocopies of entry passes.
Oh, well done.
Yeah. And so then they put them on Craigslist, and they sold them for like $100 each or whatever like that. And they made some good coin.
Well, I guess so.
And, so then nice startup capital for maybe another endeavor. Maybe a better photocopy machine or something. who knows? But they were caught, alas. And they have been fined, $750. They have to do like 10 hours of public service, like cleaning the highway or
and
something like that.
Probably forced to read old DP7 comics.
Oh, even worse. you know what? I think they'd rather go to jail.
I would think so.
And they're not allowed, apparently, to sell tickets to anybody for 3 years.
Oh.
Some sort of probation.
Right.
Right.
So all those Justin Bieber tickets they were going to sell, I probably can't do that anymore.
But, what the part I liked about the story, honestly, is that, something involving comics is good enough to counterfeit.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know what
I mean?
Like, there's guys out there counterfeiting money and counterfeiting treasury bonds and these guys
pirating movies.
Yeah, and these guys are counterfeiting tickets to a comic convention. which is great.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And apparently they sold tons of them. And alas, though, I didn't read in the story, and if somebody could maybe that's listening know, let us know, is I don't know if you were able to get in with these counterfeiting ones or not. I don't know how the people that bought them did.
Hey, I have a good counterfeiting story.
What's that?
I was with a bunch of friends in Chicago once, and we decided to go to see a Chicago Blackhawks game. Maybe it was New York. It was New York. And
That was a great story, Chris.
And a good friend of mine decided to go out and buy some tickets for everybody, and he was going to get paid later on. And we went up to go try to get in, and then the security guard said, "Oh, sorry, these tickets you can't get in. They're counterfeit."
They're counterfeit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been me, the buyer, I think.
Yeah. Did you ever get that money back?
No. I'm going to chase some guy down that I've never seen before in my life. you guys were good sports. I think we were out like $300 or something between us.
And
I think what was great about it, we all went to a comedy club.
We did, yeah.
We had to
nurse our wounds after that.
Yeah, everybody sent me their, IOUs.
that's right.
That's all right. Okay, Chris, what else we have? Oh, Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, Green Lantern.
Big, huge story. Jeff Johns did a great job with the whole Green Lantern franchise. And apparently DC now is going to go with a Red Lanterns continuing comic.
Right. Well, I mean, the whole Lantern franchise has been doing so well recently that I'm not surprised that they want to go ahead and do a Red Lantern thing. I mean, they had the Black Lanterns. I think the Black Lanterns pretty well could have had their own storyline as well. I mean, why not? They have Marvel Zombies has their own series for the most part. I mean, they have a whole bunch of mini series that continually come out.
Right.
So, I mean, why not have a Black Lanterns, which is pretty well the same idea as Marvel Zombies, just Green Lanternified, if you want to call it that, right?
Like, I mean, Johnsified.
Yeah, Johnsified. They're all undead people, characters of the DC universe that have become Black Lanterns. So, I mean, there's certainly no reason why they couldn't have their own series. And really, they're kind of, DC is pulling the same kind of move that Marvel would do anyways. DC has the Green Lantern movie coming out soon, and they're going to try to push anything Lantern-ish onto us as much as they can. I mean, how many Thor comics do they have right now?
Well, I think they said there were 8 or 9 continuing miniseries type of comics, but you knew what Marvel was doing there. Marvel was prepping the graphic novel selection, you know, in your borders, mm-hmm. and your chapters is for when the movie comes
out.
Because by that time, the miniseries would have run their course, the graphic novels would have been printed and at the bookstores.
Yes,
so
right.
when Thor comes out, people are interested in Thor, they're going to go to the local bookstore and look for material on Thor. And, you know, I don't think Marvel had... They had old stories, you know, Thor Legends
but they
and stuff.
The funny thing about the Thor franchise from way back then is that there aren't necessarily, like, you know, dozens of trade paperbacks that they could you know...
Right, there were a lot of one-off stories, a lot of things like that.
Well, just ongoing stories, right?
Yeah, like, and ongoing stories, and like, you know, beginning and end stories in the same issue. Which was obviously prevalent back in the day as well. But so I think that's what Marvel is doing, and why not DC do the same thing?
Absolutely.
Why not have them gear up all their Lantern stuff?
Yep.
And don't forget, DC is looking at, I think, DC is looking at Green Lantern like they're looking at Green Lantern hoping to replicate what Marvel did with Iron Man.
Sure, absolutely, yes.
Iron Man was a second-rate hero for years and years because the X-Men and Spider-Man and Hulk, you know, ruled TV and all that kind of stuff. And the general public knew, obviously, Spider-Man, but they also knew who the Hulk was and stuff.
Yeah,
but not very many people outside comic books
knew who Iron Man was. Right? Yeah, that's right.
And with that first movie, they hit gold. Iron Man is now, you know, A-list in the Marvel Universe. In DC for like 70 years, they've been running with soups and bats.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
are their front men.
Yep.
Wonder Woman comes in and out.
Yep.
Right? But she just, I don't know. She's just not.
I'm more out of longevity than anything else, right?
Whereas there are guys in the back, like The Flash, like Green Lantern, that they would love to get out there and propel up to the level.
Aquaman. Green Arrow. Our engineer Green Arrow is saying that Green Arrow should be one of them, too.
Right. Our engineer also said Aqualad. I won't ask why. Hawkman.
But you know what? Let's just hold on. We have to give DC some credit here. Remember, they did have that short-lived Flash TV series back in the 90s. That didn't last very, very long, but it did. They did try, anyways.
Right.
And they had a number of really awful, like, superhero roasts, I'll call it. I don't know if anybody's ever seen them. They're hard to get. You got to get them kind of bootleg or off the internet.
What do you mean superhero roasts?
Well, they would have, like... There's, like, you know, remember, like, the Dean Martin roast?
Dean
They would have, like, you know, Dr. Savannah would come up and start making fun of, like, Captain Marvel or Aquaman and stuff like that. And
when was this?
It was in, like, the 70s. They were on TV, yeah. It was a pretty awful show.
In the 70s, Christopher Blur for a little bit.
I mean, I think one of the characters that came out was a made-up character called Ghetto Man or something like
Ghetto
that.
Ghetto Man.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It was,
Right on. Okay, so... Green Lantern, Red Lanterns. Red Lanterns now launching their own series. So DC is going to see how much mileage they can get out of the Lanterns.
Well, yeah, and they will get quite a bit of mileage out of it.
I hope so. And it all hedges really on that damn movie.
Yeah, and now have you had a chance
to see
the trailer?
How
do you think it looks?
The Lantern, the difference between the Lantern and the Iron Man is you really got to buy into the Lantern more in terms of it, bring your imagination with, leave you know, the reality at the door. Whereas Iron Man, even though, of course, it's technology.
Iron Man is
technology. Green Lantern is more fantasy, science fiction, space.
There has to be
like
a high level of suspension of disbelief for Green Lantern.
Yes, that's exactly what I was trying to say, but I had no idea how to say it.
Well, you know, that's why I'm edumacated.
Right. I think that's the thing that DC will have to kind of defeat.
Yes.
If enough people can. But you know what? why not, right? I think the public that's going to see these movies has been softened up enough by a decade of these.
Completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely
so they're ready.
Agree. Yes.
They're ready.
Yes. And the technology is available now to have the kind of images and the kind of movie that makes it much easier to believe and to buy into these kind of things. Whereas years ago, if they tried to make a movie like this, it'd be all puppets and you know, makeup and you know, weird special effects. And now it's all computer generated. And CGI, exactly. and everything looks so real that it's very easy to buy into this stuff.
Exactly. All right. Well, best of luck to Red Lantern, Green Lantern,
Blue Lantern,
Yellow Lanterns. All right, Chris.
Rainbow Lantern.
We have another industry news a story I want to talk about. Is it Stan Lee?
This is Stan Lee. Excelsior.
And he has been given the 2,428th star.
Wow.
On the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
So soon.
Yeah. It's been a long time coming.
Well, you know what? Why not? I mean, here's a guy that is pretty well responsible for a lot of movies out there, really. I mean, you know, the Iron Man franchise, that's two movies. The Hulk movies, that's, you know, two or three there. And then plus all the TV series. Plus, you know, Spider-Man movies, Fantastic Four movies, and X-Men movies, Wolverine. Like, he's responsible for a lot of Hollywood-type movies out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right.
You know, let's not forget about, you know, the short-lived Doctor Strange movie from the 70s and the Nick Fury with starring David Hasselhoff.
Oh, I love that one. You know? That was a great one.
So, I mean, there's lots of canon out there for him to take acceptance for.
You said it right. I think they're late with Stan Lee.
Yep.
I think he deserved one long time ago. And I think they should put him right beside Howard the Duck. Did Howard the Duck get one? Probably not.
I don't know if he ever did. Yeah, I don't
Adam
know.
West.
Does yeah, he have one? There you go.
Does he have one?
Probably not.
Yeah,
probably not.
Yeah. Adam West, he didn't have one, but he deserves one.
Oh, well, he should for his reprisal as the mayor of Quahog and Family Guy.
The mayor? Was he the mayor of Quahog?
Yeah, he is the mayor of Quahog. And as Adam West, too.
Wow.
He plays himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you're famous when you can play yourself.
That's right.
Remember Red Buttons on the comedian on the Dean Martin roast?
Yeah, yeah.
Never got a dinner, right? We can do that both. Never got a star
That's
in the
right.
Walk of
I
Fame.
I know. He really did.
Conan!
He should be next to Conan.
Yeah.
Or at least Arnold.
Yeah, you're right.
He should be next to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, really.
Because, I mean, Conan, you know, was Arnold's big jump into movies. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
big stardom.
So why not be right next to Conan?
Hey,
Arnold, rather.
Bill Bixby, you can be side.
There you go.
I'm sure that Bill Bixby
Lou Ferrigno.
Do you think Lou Ferrigno has one?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Nor should. Poor Lou.
Yeah.
But Lou always got the short end of the stick. I know you've seen Pumping Iron, the bodybuilding movie.
Right, yeah.
You know, he got the short end of the stick from Arnold then.
Lou had his dad, remember, watching out for him during that. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
So that's great to see Stan Lee. Stan Lee gets the Walk of Fame. I think it happened yesterday. There was a big ceremony and all that kind of stuff. But Stan
well,
is
that,
like,
that's why he canceled being on the show. Our
producer Anthony Falcone was unable to get Stan Lee to come on to the Comic Culture radio show last year in 2010, but Anthony promised me in a video conference we had yesterday that he will get Stan on in 2011.
Promised us.
Yes.
Wow. Walt,
tell Chris I'm going to get Stan on in 2011.
That is great.
Yeah. He didn't say which Stan. That's the problem.
All right.
Stan Wykowski. Okay. I think, Chris, that we're going to end industry news there.
All right.
Do you have a musical segue?
Of course I do. I've got, you know, for those of you that remember the old movie from, you know, probably, I think it was like late 80s for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we've got a little bit of Vanilla Ice for you.
Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go, 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 go. Green machine, gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down?
slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah, everybody must move. Vanilla is still with the new jack groove. Gonna rock and roll the place with the power of the Ninja Turtle bass. Iceman, you know I'm not playing. Devastate to show what the turtles are saying.
Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap.
In the gap, drop that bass and get the ninja rap. Just feel it, if you know what I mean. Give it up for the heroes in green. Just flowing, smooth with the power, kicking it up hour after hour. Cause in this life there's only one winner. You better aim straight, you can hit the center. In it to win it with a team of four Ninja Turtles that you got at the door. It's
ninja, ninja rap. Ninja, ninja rap. Ninja, ninja rap. Go ninja, go! Go ninja, go ninja, go! Go ninja, go ninja, go! Go ninja, go ninja, go! Go, 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 go!
Villains, you better run and hide, because one day you might not slide. So choose your weapon, don't slip. Vanilla's in control with the effect of a mic grip. Rocking the crowd the way it should be rocked, with the Miami drop that you like a lot. You know it's hidden like a ninja turtle. When the bass kicks in, you better check the level. The power of a ninja is strong, fighting all creeps until they all go gone.
Ninja, ninja, rap. Ninja, ninja, rap.
Wow, Chris, that was great. Who the heck was that again?
That was Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice.
And actually, you know what? I was corrected by my engineer here that it was, in fact, from the 90s, and it was TMNT 2.
Right.
You know, it's a good thing that, and that James is here.
I think somebody at this table knows what they're talking
about. Yeah, I know. Finally. Jeez.
Hey, isn't Vanilla Ice, you think he's got a Walk of Fame star?
Yeah, that's a good question. He should. He should. I mean, sure. Yeah. Why not?
I guess.
Yeah. I think he should.
Oh, okay. All right. Chris, I wanted to talk about a little old comics a little bit. 2010 was a very eventful year for the comic book collecting community.
Okay. How so?
Well, I want to talk about that.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to spout out.
No, there was a lot of developments during the year that affects the collectors, and there's a lot of collectors, investors,
people
throwing down tons of money.
Are you talking about just for investment purposes or for...
Even collecting.
Just for collecting
just for
on
collecting.
Its own.
There's tons of collectors out there collecting Spider-Man, but there's also tons of investors, right?
Okay.
And
there's
a mix of both. Right?
Okay, fair enough.
So, one is I wanted to talk about obviously the $1 million comics.
Yes,
2010 broke that barrier. You had two copies of the first appearance of Superman,
right?
Selling for over $1 million. There was one graded out of 10, an 8 that sold for $1 million, and one graded an 8.5 that sold for $1.5 million.
Right.
And just so you know, that 8.5 is the highest graded known copy. That's
right.
Why I got so much money.
Now, was there not a first appearance of Batman?
Yeah,
that also
and the
sold
third
for,
one
like,
was a first appearance of Batman that sold just over $1 million.
Did it sell? I thought it sold for under $1 million.
$1.75 million. There was another. There's been a couple of copies of those books selling after the fact, and they were lesser grade copies, and they were getting into 400,000 to 600,000.
Okay.
So, but those sales, what they did is they really propelled investment comics onto the mainstream news media.
Oh yeah,
guys like the Business Report, Bloomberg's covered it.
Yep.
You know,
I would think that anytime an investment piece of one item of anything really that sells for over $1 million has to be of some sort of newsworthy item, whether especially an investment piece such as a comic book, which is unheard of before. I mean, this isn't like a gold bullion or diamonds or something. This is something that
or like a Picasso
time.
Piece of art or something like that. Yeah, it's basically a printed.
It's pop culture too, right?
It's not
of a one of a kind,
right?
As far as a painting goes,
right?
It's a one of a kind that there's no other copies that are in that kind of shape, but there's other editions of that.
Exactly. There are other copies of that. And it's just the highest graded ones. The few that are the best of the best get the crazy money. But what that bodes well for, like you hit it too, is the pop culture just embracing all the comic book characters and stuff. You know, we're talking about Green Lantern hopefully jumping onto the A-list and Iron Man and things like that. So now you're getting a society that's familiar with these characters.
That's right, yeah.
And now you're getting a certain portion of that society that's affluent.
Yep.
And now you're going to get a certain portion of that affluent society that wants a piece of that history.
Now,
right?
you're absolutely right. I mean, now, correct me if I'm wrong. Are there not...
Oh, I will.
He has before and he'll do it again.
Right.
Are there not some, I'll call them celebrities, who have... personal comic book buyers for them. Like, yeah. I remember hearing rumors that a guy like, say, Leonardo DiCaprio has a personal comic book buyer.
Yes.
And that's basically all this guy does.
Yes.
Is that, I mean, not just for him,
yes,
but he goes around and he buys comic books as investment properties.
Well, I know, I mean, I won't mention his name. Maybe he doesn't want it mentioned. But I know such a person that goes, he'll fly out to these large events. And the trick is, you see, where a buyer comes in handy is CGC, the grading company in Florida, grades comics. They're human like you and I, and they may a 9.4 out of 10. They're not all the same,
right?
So maybe this particular buyer wants perfectly centered.
Right.
He wants the highest page quality. He wants something that a trained eye will say, hey, that's not a 9.4, that's a 9.6, right?
Okay.
And there may be a 9.4 that visually doesn't look like a 9.4 because it may have a dog ear on the top, or it may have a slightly off-centered thing. The staples may be at the front rather than the side. You know, these are things that maybe the grading company does not differentiate, but a trained buyer that's acting based on the instructions of a person that's fronting the money will go around and he will refuse beautiful comics because they have a small imperfection that's a pet peeve of that buyer.
Right, I was going to ask you about that. I would think that, you know, depending on what qualities you look for in a comic book, you may disagree with the grade, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, maybe if there's, you know, maybe James, our engineer, might look for perfect centering, whereas you might look for perfect corners. Right, you know, or maybe, you know, I might look for, you know, the no rusty staples or something like that.
Exactly.
Right. So I mean, so everybody has their own thing.
Exactly.
And that they might want to be looking for. Okay.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
And believe it or not, hunting these things down is labor intensive. It's time intensive. Oh. So I mean, if you're a person, you know, of means, and you want these things, I mean, you know, why not hire somebody?
If you could think, I mean, you know, I often try to think about what it's like for somebody that doesn't know anything about comics to go into a comic book store and look for a comic. It seems pretty daunting. And if you can, and if you haven't been to a comic book store, if you don't necessarily read comics, but you're sort of interested in that stuff, think about going into a library and trying to find a perfect copy of any book in that library that hasn't been read and isn't dog-eared and is in perfect shape. And that's kind of what you're trying to look for, right? I mean, think of the millions of comics out there, and you're looking for perfect shapes based on what you're looking for.
Right. Now, the thing that we have to remember here, and this is something that, you know, I'm going to, you know, put out there, is that the differentiation of the comics isn't over yet. So what happened was 20 years ago, before this grading company, they were just really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they were all blanketed into really nice.
Right,
whoa,
right.
That's a really nice copy.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's a really nice copy, and they were all grouped in roughly the same price.
Yeah,
so that's say 15 years ago, even.
Yeah,
whoa, that, you know, Spider-Man
beautiful.
Number one is beautiful.
Yeah,
whoa, that other one is beautiful. They're going to get roughly the same price.
Yeah,
now you got a 9.4 and a 9.6.
Right.
Both of them were beautiful.
Well, okay, and now even before now, though, I mean, this is something that, you know, remember, like, you know, before there was a beautiful copy, then it was, well, now it's graded, you know, it's mint, it's near mint, it's fine, it's very fine, but now it's like those grades are even finer.
Right.
Now you've got like a 9.2 out of 10. Like before, you'd have like maybe like from 1 to 10, a scale of 1 to 10, well, it's a 9.
Right.
But now you've got, well, this is a 9.2, this is a 9.3, this is a 9.4, or whatever it happens
to be,
right?
Yeah. Well, you're right there, but But I think back in the day, the price guide stopped at 9.4.
Okay,
right. It was just near mid, right? And then they went to near mid minus. They kind of lowered the scale a bit. But back in the time that they had, you know, the beautiful copy is a 9.4,
right.
You're unable to differentiate between the niceness, really, generally speaking, of copies that were 9.4 and above.
Right.
They were
right.
just so nice,
yeah.
right? Whereas now you have the differentiation between a 9.4 and a 9.6, which on a book like Spider-Man number one, literally could be worth tens and tens of thousands
now,
of dollars.
Which I don't, sorry to interrupt you now. Hold on. Now, in the price guide, I mean, for somebody that doesn't really know much about comics, there's this book out there that people refer to as the comic book Bible, and it has all these, every sort of comic that's ever been published in it, and it's got grades for each one and how much you should be paying for each one. Now, you've often told me that there are some comics that can get multiple times guide. Explain that to me. I don't understand.
Strictly supply and demand. A guide is just a guide. The guide is the most important reference and tool for any comic collector. So just because things sell for below and above guide, the guide should never be disregarded. But basically, if a comic book becomes hot, and you know the price guide says it's worth $50, and demand goes through the roof, obviously it's going to be selling for $200-$300.
Right.
That's basically the premise of a book getting multiple of guide. Also, they also get, because the guide stops at a 9.2 grade, so you know a comic is worth $1,000 at 9.2. Well, obviously they don't list the value for a 9.4 or a 9.6. So if you see an auction and a 9.6 gets like $11,000,
right.
Oh my God, it's 11 times guide. Well, it's not 11 times guide. It's 11 times the 9.2 guide. You're just getting almost exponential increase based on the grade increase.
Now, and that sets the precedent, sort of, right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
now people are going to expect to pay based on that.
Right. But the thing I was getting to is that whole differentiation isn't done. And that's what these guys that are buying are the front end of, is 9.6s are not all equal.
Right.
And as we move forward, these guys that are hedging that the buyers will know the best 9.6s, they're hedging as we move forward into the future, even within the 9.6s.
Yeah.
The better 9.6s will be able to be noted,
right?
Is what I'm saying. So, anyways, it's an exciting time for the old collectible comics. It's a very vibrant community still.
For sure. Now,
and a lot of new money is coming into it.
Do you think that the idea of selling or buying, investing in comics is still available, or are all the big ones still kind of taken up?
Oh, no. You know what? There's still a lot of room. You know, a great example is 2 years ago, you can pretty well get a Green Lantern number 7 from the 1960s at a very reasonable price.
Right.
Today, the book is through the roof in terms of price.
Right.
And the reason is that's the first appearance of Sinestro.
Right.
of Sinestro. Of course, Sinestro is going to play the main villain.
In one of the movies.
In the movie.
Yeah.
And all the demand now is going after the first appearance of Sinestro.
Sure,
so
sure.
There are other things that can happen along that line.
You never know.
Forever.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, very good. Well, let's just continue on here. We're going to have a quick musical interlude, then we're going to get into our previews pick of the month. That was a little bit of the old Incredible Hulk theme song for you there, Walt. That was just for you.
Thanks, Chris. Chris brings us to one of our favorite segments of the show, and that is taking a look at the previews catalog. Of course, the previews catalog is the catalog that most comic fans order their stuff out of. So the January previews catalog is available right now.
Can you say the word catalog again?
Yes, the January previews catalog is available right now at your local comic book store.
The catalog is the catalog for the catalogs.
And you can go in and peruse it. You can look through it.
Whoa. Slow down there, Einstein. I get to look through a catalog?
Any comic shop worth their salt will have a catalog.
Floundering here.
A novel idea, I know.
It really is.
What we do at on our show once a month is we go into the back of the book.
Yes.
And pick some gems that fans should not live without.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and do this because we're running out of time.
I'm gonna go on page number 401.
Yes,
of the previews catalog. you can pick up the Betty.
Tell me again what we're looking through, please.
You can pick up the Betty Page by Olivia playing cards.
Oh, well, that's good. Betty Page is of course the pinup queen of the 1950s.
Yeah, and Olivia is
like an erotic artist.
Erotic artist. So that's a great marriage of talent.
Yes. And also a great way to break up a marriage as well.
Yes. Okay.
Here you go, honey. Let's play poker tonight.
Tonight.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be staring at these cards for longer than I stare at you.
Are you going to show me your cards? Sorry. All right.
I need to be alone with the cards for a while.
Chris, now over to you. I know that you like an item on page 367.
Yes, 367 had Mr. Toast Series 2 plushes. I have no idea what this is all about here, but apparently we missed the first series.
What? There was a Series 1?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to believe, but... I'll just read you a little quick tidbit here.
Please do.
It says, make the world of Dan Goodsell's Mr. Toast and all of his food friends yours with these cute and collectible plush toys. Mr. Toast is joined by Cornelius Candy Corn, Shaky Bacon, Joe the Egg, and Clem Lemon.
Love it.
And apparently he has new friends that include Miles the Ice Pop, Sophie the Ice Pop, and Drunken Carrot.
Nice.
Yeah. So, nice. Yeah. And then it says here, throw your own dance party when you collect them all. So apparently we have to throw a dance party.
Wow, Chris. And that is on page 367 of the previews catalog.
And for the manufacturer of...
manufacturer. Happy anniversary! Happy anniversary!
For the manufacturer of the Mr. Toast plushes, you can also send us some contributions because nowhere else are they ever going to get solicited like that.
Plug. That is an excellent plug. Maybe they should have been one of our sponsors.
They probably should have.
Oh. All right, James, we're going to throw it to our engineer, James, for his pick of the previews catalog.
My pick comes from page 359, and it's the Indiana Jones Golden Idol Replica Bank.
Oh, I like that. And, of course, the Golden Idol, that was the one that was like at the beginning of the movie where he was, you know...
You throw me the idol, I throw you the whip.
Yeah, that's right.
He has the bag of sand, and he's playing it.
Oh, wow. Very good. Well, now you can store your own gold bullion in the Golden Idol.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
And when good you're pick. Full, you can outrun your giant boulder when you're going to the bank.
Exactly. I like that. Just don't get hit by any of those poisonous dart things in your back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, that was a great look at the catalog.
It really was, if we do say so ourselves. But you know what? I'm going to cut you off there because this is getting to be ridiculous. So you know what? Let's end it right here.
Put us out of our misery.
But please, you know what? If you do have any comments or questions about our show, you're more than welcome to email us through the Comic Book Daily website.
I believe Chris is trying to say leave us a comment at the Comic Book Daily website.
Sorry, I didn't say email. I meant to say leave a comment. Or you can ask us a question too, and we'll be more than happy to respond to it. We love that you're listening to us. The fact that you're listening to us does make our show better. Have yourself a wonderful day, and go out and support your local retailer.
See everyone next week.